Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Brandon Woodruff. Welcome to the Small Business Podcast, where every week I interview a different small business owner, just in businesses all over the spectrum, and I ask them questions that are just really practical, questions that you can hear and take the answers to and just apply them to your context. My goal is to help us all as business owners just be better and more efficient at getting whatever it is we believe in and are selling out to the world. And I want to create this podcast so it's a place that we can just focus on how we actually do this, how we actually run these businesses. Today's guest, I have Ren Jones. He is the owner and founder of Fitness Jones Training. And to be totally transparent with you, Ren is one of the few other fitness coaches or personal trainers that I want to have on this podcast or that I would put on here. I just think we've been connected for a while in a group online, and he is just a really solid guy. I think he's an exceptional coach, and I just love the way he does things, and I knew he would have a lot of good stuff for you guys on this episode and for me too. So he did, absolutely, he delivered. I can't wait for you to hear this. Just a quick plug before we jump in. I am a fitness coach, online fitness coach. So if you're somebody, no matter where you are, who's not sure what to do and all the noise out there about your fitness, who is struggling with consistency or with reaching for the next thing, just shoot me a text, 251-635-8055, or just find me on Facebook at Woodruff Fitness. And I'm happy to just chat back and forth with you. If that turns into me coaching you, cool. If it turns into me just kind of giving you some answers and pointing you in the right direction, that's fine too. I just love doing this stuff. And the second thing is I also have a used furniture company, Kansas City Used Furniture. If you, for whatever reason, care to follow along with that, you can find Kansas City Used Furniture on Facebook and Instagram. All right, I am excited for you to hear this episode. Let me know your thoughts. All right. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Small Business Podcast. Today, I have Ren Jones of Fitness Jones Training here. So, Ren, why don't you just, I'm going to pass it over to you, man. Why don't you just go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do?
Hey, thanks, Brandon. First of all, hey, thanks so much for reaching out to me, allowing me to be here, man.
Yeah, of course.
I never want to overlook the fact that anybody in the planet is even remotely interested in what I have to say about anything. So I really appreciate that, man. So at this point in my life, I'm a coach, for lack of a better term. I like to call myself a fitness professional, because I have, you know, quite a few certifications. But generally speaking, I coach primarily women through online personal training and nutrition. So I've got a certification for personal training through the National Academy of Sports Medicine. I also have a certification as a corrective exercise specialist through National Academy of Sports Medicine. I've got two certifications through an organization called Precision Nutrition for nutrition coaching. And I even went so far as to get a certification to be an online trainer. There's some specific nuances to doing business over the internet. So I went and got one of those too. So, and you know, I'm still working on some other certifications as we speak. So I'm a lifelong learner, man, but I love to help people, especially in this regard.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. And are you completely 100% online? Do you do any in-person stuff at all?
Oh, that's a great question. So I am rolling back clients as we speak to online only. So at the end of January, starting in February, I won't be taking any more clients sort of in-person training. One certification I didn't mention is I have a level one and a level two boxing coaching certification from an organization
called
Boxing Burn Academy. Yeah. So I will be doing like some boxing coaching. It's you know, it's really portable. I don't need a gym for it necessarily. I can visit people where they are. The programming not as intense. So on my side, there's not quite as much of the intellectual equity required to take somebody through a boxing. And what I mean for the listeners out there is that I don't have to, you know, it's somewhat tedious to write exercise programming. Right. If you're a coach, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you don't just throw cookie cutter programs at people.
Right. I don't take 10 out of 10 people and throw burpees at them.
Right.
So So because of that,
I would end this podcast right now if you were.
So because of that, there's an intellectual sort of equity, you know, the brain sweat that goes into every session with the client. You know, people who aren't coaches maybe don't realize that. Like, it's very, if you got a good coach, they're very thoroughly considering the workout that they're going to do with you. So that frees up time for me as a business owner to still monetize some of the certifications that I have in person boxing, but save time from the preparation process that I would normally go through for in-person coaching. I'm still preparing for my online clients, but I don't have to then leave the home, you know, drive time there, drive time back, and execution time of the training session. So I save about 2 hours per client. And one of the greatest things you can do as a small business owner, man, is find efficiency.
Yeah.
Save time.
Definitely. For sure, man. 100% on board with you there. So, so what were you doing before you got into the fitness coaching game?
Yeah, man, that's a great question. So I had an interesting and somewhat tragic sort of transition, to the personal coaching side. And I share this story with me everywhere I go. I think it's just good. It's just good for generally understanding sort of my mentality, my attitude, but also the fact that life's going to throw you some curveballs. So I was an insurance executive for a long time, and I managed a few different life insurance offices, training life insurance agents for sales. I was a sales manager, sales training, you know, got to work my way up to executive position. And that was, you know, it paid really well, as I'm sure you guys can imagine. My stress levels were off the charts, and I got introduced to tragedy through that organization, not because of the organization, just because of life. So I'm out training literally like my very first sales agent as I first became promoted into a low level manager. I'm out there training my first ever sales agent. We're going into people's homes to talk to them about their life insurance. And I got a call from home, man, that my big brother Rodney had a heart attack and passed away. Oh, now, I was raised in the home with my two siblings, Rodney and Robin, and my mom and my grandmother. And that was devastating, you know. Of course, like, that set me back, man, because you'll never be as introduced to your own mortality as you will if you lose a sibling or a peer. Like, somebody around age or a sibling, it really sort of hits home, right? It hits a nerve that you're not going to live forever. And we know that, you know, intrinsically, but, you know, having that experience and man, you know, I stayed with the company. About 5 years later, I get a call from my older sister, talking to her for about 15 minutes. We hang up the phone, and my sister was so conversational, man. She used to talk so much that she would talk until her cell phone was dead. These are my older siblings. I'm the youngest of three on that side. You know, my mom, dad's married. My dad got remarried, and I have two other siblings also, but the ones that I was raised with. So, you know, 15 minutes later, I get a call from my husband, and my sister would commonly use her husband's phone to call me when she talked her phone until the battery ran out. I got a call from her husband, and he tells me that my sister just died in a car accident. Like, literally 15 minutes after hanging up the phone with her. Yeah, man, my sister was an addict. She drank, she got in the car, and she hit a tree. So this is about 4 years exactly after losing my brother. Unfortunately, my mother had a massive stroke earlier in our lives, around 1996. I lost my brother in 2007 and my sister in 2011. So my mother required care. She was living with my sister and my sister's husband, my brother-in-law at the time. And my brother-in-law was a dialysis patient, man, and he was so devastated by the loss of my sister. Suddenly, he stopped taking his dialysis. He died 90 days after my sister did. So now I've got to take care of mom. I've got this high-pressure job, right? You know, working for the insurance company. You know, in the course of my life, I had pursued a career in, like, music before. I thought I was going to be an R&B group in the 90s. Like almost every other black guy on the East Coast, you know, we thought we were going to be boys to men. You know, I'm a pretty good singer too, man. But Yeah.
You can sample it on here if you want to.
Yeah. I'll give you, yeah. I might give you guys, now I have to charge that.
All right. Let's hold off on that.
But in any case, and I'd always been a guy that was into fitness, right? My boys in high school, they were football players. I'm a band geek, a musician. But they started me exercising. So, you know, I'm thinking about how much I love fitness and how I had started a Facebook page when I was in the hospital with my mom near the end of her life, you know, because I ended up taking care of her because now she's got no home, right?
Yeah.
You know, her daughter and her son-in-law are both deceased. She's dependent on her youngest son at this point to help her care. And I'm sitting in the hospital with her, like, literally like the last 6 or so months of her life because her health declined. You know, she went through a lot of stress. She lost two of her babies. I know you have two kids, and I'm sure you can't imagine going through that, man. Heaven forbid. Yeah. You know, so I'm in the hospital killing time, and somebody asked me a fitness question. I'm still an insurance guy at this point. Somebody asked me a question. I answered. They say, oh, man, you always know so much about fitness. I think, so I started a Facebook page. This is like 2011-ish. 2012, something like that. So I started a Facebook page called I Got a Fitness Jones, you know, having a Jones, something like having an addiction, a basketball love Jones. My last name is Jones, so I'm feeling very clever. And the page took off, man.
That's people so asked awesome.
Questions, not stop me sharing content, you know, and I said, well, you know, maybe I'll get a certification for this stuff. And I know it's sort of a drawn-out story, but it's really important.
Oh, man. No, it's. I'm glad you're sharing it.
To understand where I come from and why I approach every day with the level of positivity that I do.
So
I start this fitness page, man, on Facebook. I'm sitting watching, like, NFL Network, you know, at some point when I'm in the hospital with mom because I'm there every day, you know, making sure she's all right, helping her get through. And a commercial came on for NASM. And it was like a sitcom, man, because I'm sitting there in the commercials like, have you ever thought about being a personal trainer? And I'm like, like, you thought that you might not have the money to do it? I was like, that's exactly what I thought. He was like, do you think you'd be able to do it on a payment plan? And I was like, I really do believe I could do it on a payment plan. Like, call this 800 number today. We've got special plans. So I dial the 800 number, man. I sign up for his personal trainer certification through NASM, you know. Mom passes in February of 2014. In March of 2014, I pass my test for NASM. I'm certified as a personal trainer. And by like May of 2014, I gave my insurance job a notice, man. Like, I was waking up with headaches and stomach aches and, you know, stress. And these small business owners out there listening probably can identify with this, with the exception of, you're under stress for your own business right now. I was working for somebody else. I've been into music. I've been into fitness. And since P. Diddy never returned any of my phone calls, man, I was like, I'll just go on the fitness route. And that's where I am today. So I got into this business, man, because, you know, I have family members who lost their lives due to, like, lifestyle-related issues, man. My brother's lifestyle contributed to his heart attack. My sister's stress levels and lifestyle and choices for addiction led to her demise. You know, my mom smoked for many years. She worked hard, but she didn't give herself great self-care. So she had that stroke, you know, when I was in college was when she had the stroke. But she had to live in that state, man, for, you know, 18 years or so after, depending on her children to give her care. So, you know, I specialize in coaching women, almost specifically women with children, because I don't want their kids to go through that. You know, it's really easy for a mom to sort of neglect herself, you know, for the purposes of giving her energy to her children, which she should. That's commendable.
Right.
But I can tell you, man, there's no amount of work that a mom will do, no amount of sacrifice that a mom can make that when she compromises her health, her children wouldn't wish that she had taken better care of herself too.
Yeah.
You know, because once your mom's gone, dude, like you're an adult, you know?
Yeah.
Something goes down and you can't even call your mom to talk about it. You're in the throes of adult, or when you're responsible for a child, you know, both of those events are like a signal that, okay, like you're an adult now. So
yeah.
that's how I got into the business, man. Not to take time away from the nuts and bolts.
No, to me, it's important. I mean, I want people to share as much background as they can. And if that takes up a little bit more of the time, I'd rather it do that so that we get a picture of where you're coming from. And man, let me just say, first of all, I'm so sorry you had to go through all that.
I appreciate that. And
second of all, I mean, it's really inspiring that you are, you know, that you're doing what you're doing and as you're as successful as you are and everything, you know, after having gone through all that, because a lot of people would shut down.
It's easy to implode under those circumstances, but that's also part of the entrepreneurial spirit, man, right? Yeah. Like for the small business owners out there, you know, if 100 are listening, 80 of them probably got some bad news today in some regard to their business. Like the challenges are they're just locked in step with the nature of being a business owner, right? Now, mine were probably uniquely tragic.
Yeah.
You know, everybody's going to lose a loved one. Like, that's going to happen. Maybe not in that order in that short period of time.
Right.
But, man, if you're in business, you're going to go through something.
Yeah. Like, oh, yeah, man. I am not an emotional person at all. Like, I am sometimes dangerously detached from my emotions, like, and that sometimes is a really good thing, and other times it's not. But like, I've only been fully self-employed. I'm not gonna harp on my story here because I've done it before and we'll do it again, I'm sure. But I've only been fully self-employed for about 7 months now, and I have experienced probably more emotion in that time than I have collectively and maybe the rest of my life. So and I'm 31, so I mean, it's intense. Absolutely. Man, there are definite highs and lows, that's for sure.
Absolutely.
No amount of schooling,
no amount of education, no amount of processes or technique can fully prepare the entrepreneur for the emotional stress of entrepreneurship. It's a whole different animal, man.
Absolutely, man. Well, now that we kind of have some background, I want to get into some of the practical stuff that we can, that we can just kind of, people can hear this and they can just hear how you go about these things and find some pieces in there that they can take and apply to their business. So first of all, the first question is, who's your target audience? You pretty much already covered that. You would say usually mothers.
Usually. My target demo is about, usually women age 35 to 55, a lot of times they're moms, a lot of times they're married, and then a lot of times they are also working, outside the home in addition to whatever duties they have around the home. So that's pretty much my target. And I niched down to that target as of January 1st, 2019, when last year came in, I made the decision to totally cut off and only specifically work with women.
That's a big step.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, that's awesome. So let's say getting into the little bit of the marketing piece here. How do you, I don't know like how full your client book is. I'm sure I've seen your stuff. We talked about it before, but like us being part of the same group online and things like that, I've followed your stuff for a while and definitely learned from it. But I would say, how do you get out in front of people? How do you keep kind of a steady influx? So whether you're trying to fill your client book now, or whether you're just trying to, as people drop off, make sure you refill those spots. Like, how are you marketing and getting your stuff out there?
Yes, that's great. That's such a great question. So here's my strategy for branding. Mm-hmm. And I'll go branding first because branding and marketing aren't the same thing. Right. And I think a lot of entrepreneurs, a lot of solopreneurs, a lot of business owners, we get caught up in the marketing in the absence of doing the branding. And the difference, the simplest way I like to put the difference between marketing and branding is, marketing is asking someone out on a date. Branding is the reason they say yes or no.
I like that.
I hope you guys understand that.
Yep. I'd be writing that down if I didn't have this to go back and listen to.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. You can ask as 100,000 people on a date, but if the word about your brand is that you're a jerk, it doesn't matter how well you ask for the date. It doesn't matter if you ask for a date at the halftime of a Super Bowl, a Super Bowl commercial because you got the best airtime. If they don't like you, the answer is no.
Right.
It doesn't matter if you do it with a Skywriter. You know, it doesn't matter if you do it with a plane with a banner overhead. Yeah. If you have Elsa from Frozen freeze the words into the ocean, like none right. of that matters. And a lot of the ways that solopreneurs suffer is we concentrate on the marketing first. Mm-hmm. We think if I could come up with the right ad, or yeah. if I could pay enough money, or if I could deliver the ad in the right platform, YouTube, Facebook, radio, TV.
Yeah.
And the way that I get in front of people is branding.
Yeah.
This conversation that you and I are having is branding.
Yeah.
You know, you sending me a message saying, "Hey, Ren, I'd like to get you on a podcast." And I'm like, "Sure, brother, no problem." Mm-hmm. The jokes that I sent you back and forth,
mm-hmm.
I'm building my brand with you.
Yeah.
You have a connotation of me based on how I treated you as a human
right.
up to this point.
Yeah.
And I like to say up to this point, it's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody asks you about, "Hey, you know that guy, Ren Jones," you're more likely to say, "Oh, man, that guy's awesome, man. Funny yeah, dude. Yeah. We had the best conversation. You know, he took the time to listen to stuff I had to say, and it was all." So, here's a few of the ways that I brand to lead to marketing. And I don't want to over-explain the question, but I want to make sure that you understand
how important that
part of it is. So I answer a lot of questions on the internet. Mm-hmm. Like in my business, personal training, and nutrition, there's always plenty of questions about what to eat, what to do. If anybody who's been on social media for 5 minutes in the month of January has seen somebody say something about losing weight or eating better or not having sugar or what have you. So I always take the time to answer a person's questions. Some coaches don't feel that that's worth their time. And they may say things like, "Well, you know, I get paid for this. This is my job. So I can't give you stuff for free." And I totally get that. I'm not speaking against that at all. Whatever floats their boat. For me, I consider it a privilege if someone has an issue in their life and my name jumps to the top of the list, that mm-hmm. this person has the skill set to help me improve my life, even if it's just a simple answer. I honor that. I'm honored by that. But again, I lost family members to, health-related issues. So there's a different center point that I coach from.
Yeah.
I answer questions, man. When peers want to know how I've done something, I tell them exactly how I did it.
Yeah.
You know, when somebody says, "Hey, I like how you captured your videos. How'd you do that, man?" If I've got time, it's nothing for me to take 30 minutes, send them a video or answer the question or say, "Hey, let's set up a phone call. I can chat up." Like, you know, that's important. That's branding.
Yeah.
When I see people in my apartment building, and I speak to them and I ask them what their dog's name is and is it okay to pet? And then when I see them again, I remember the dog's name. I forget the people, but I remember the dog's name. You know, that's how dog people are, though, right? Like, you forget the person's name. You just remember the dog. So if I see Tank, I'm like, "Tank, what's up, buddy?" Tank's wagging, you know.
Kind of way you the person's name.
Yeah, absolutely, man. You know, when people comment on a post that I do on social media, I reply to every single comment.
Yeah.
When they share a post, if it's not private and I can go to where they shared it, I thank them for sharing it.
Yeah.
I'm giving away more content than probably most people in the field do, or at least I try to. And for me, that's branding. You can give your way into becoming a brand. It's something that somebody that we both follow, Jonathan Goodman, does. Mm-hmm. Like, he's always giving nuggets out there. He's got some paid programs, but if you hang around that group for long enough, you're going to learn something, man. So I read a book a while ago called Jab, 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 Right Cross. Mm-hmm. It's by a guy named Gary V. Gary V. And it just says, man, that usually we ask too quickly. We don't give enough. Now, it's my nature to give. That's just sort of who I am. But there's nothing wrong with that being a deployable strategy for your business either. Like, it's okay to do it because you want to do it for your business and not out of goodness of your heart. It's better if you do it out of goodness of your heart, but you got to realize you give, and then you ask.
Yeah.
So since I've been doing this since 2013-ish, I was certified in 2014, but since I've been doing it that long and I've built relationships with people through the internet, in person, through gyms that I worked at, through clientele, you know, my clients, that's another way that I brand. that allows me to be very, very efficient with the marketing piece now.
Yeah.
Because if I don't have a brand, the marketing doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You know, I can come up with a sneaker line and put the sneakers all over Facebook. I can spend $1,000 on Facebook ads and somebody can pass by a lemonade stand where they're selling Nikes for three times as much as my shoes are all over the internet. People are much more likely to buy the Nikes.
Right.
The brand satisfies the marketing piece, yeah, not the other way around. Mm-hmm. So sometimes we try to take all these marketing ideas to build our brand up through the sales process, and it doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
You're much more likely to buy a pair of Nikes that are out of the box at a lemonade stand for twice as much as my shoes that you have no idea what the shoe is. You know, we'll call them Renergies.
You've thought about this before, haven't you?
Yeah, that's right. Get your press pair of Renergies. You got it all over the internet, and you can't go on your Facebook feed without seeing my goofy commercial. And you're like, yeah, those shoes, they look all right, but I saw some Nikes outside at the lemonade stand. Yeah. I'm going to go and grab those. That's because of the brand,
yeah,
not because of the marketing. So to flip the coin to the marketing side, a lot of times with my marketing for clients, I get it, you know, one of a few ways. Number one way is just simple Facebook posts, a call to action at the end of a social media post for those that use social media is really important. And a call to action is just exactly what it sounds like. You're asking for someone who's just read your post to do that. Yeah. A call to action could be, please share this post. Mm-hmm. That's a call to action. A call to action could be, please tag a friend if you think they'd like this post. A call to action could be, I'm enrolling no more than 5 women in the course of March for an online coaching program. If you want to, you know, lose weight, feel better, never have to worry about, you know, buying, you know, clothing again, click the link below and I'll contact you if you meet the requirements. So in my general post, I can put that call to action. Mm-hmm. Second way I get clients is referrals. My clients refer me. Again, that goes back to the branding, but I always tell them, hey, if you've got anybody that, you know, needs coaching, these are the times that you get to enroll. Don't hesitate to mention me. Put them in touch with me. You know, I'll take good care of them. And they believe that I'll take good care of them. Again, the marketing works off of the branding piece, not the opposite.
Yeah.
And then the third way is paid ads. I'll do paid ads on Facebook primarily. My population of people that follow my page isn't tremendous, but they are engaged because of the branding.
Yeah.
I always thank them when they share something. I always reply when it, so they feel like they know me, and they do know me to a certain extent.
Yeah.
And then one other branding piece that's important, and I just did it, but I didn't mention it. And it is important. People need to know your story. If you're going to properly brand your business, people need to know your story. They're going to be endeared to your story. You know, your vibe attracts your tribe. That's what they say. And all too often with business owners, we want to emit this idea of perfection, right? You know, we're Susie business owner or Sammy business owner, and you know, we're upright and upstanding American citizens, and you know, we love our business. We want you to love it too. Like, it would be a discredit to my business if I didn't share the story about how I got into the business.
Yeah.
Like, people need to know that.
Mm-hmm.
That's important. Because everybody's got the same product you have. Whoever you are out there, unless you invent it like a time machine, everybody's got your product. You need to know that. They're never buying your product. They're never buying your price. They're buying you or the organization or something they're in. Yeah. So the more they know you, the better they can differentiate you from the other people who also sell your product. And if they know you well enough and feel comfortable enough with you, you can operate outside of price comparison and guarantee yourself a certain amount of market share because your transparency, your honesty is going to connect people to you because of the emotionality of the connection.
Yep.
That was a long way to answer that question, but
no, man. Hey, it's so much value in there, though. I mean, you're not just going off on like long-winded things that's repetitive. It's so many different things. You know, like I'm a 2x speed podcast kind of guy, and this is one of the ones that I would listen on 1x speed so that I could be taking notes as you're saying stuff. So it's really valuable stuff, man. And I agree 100%. I've learned some stuff from what you just said, and some of it is exactly where. I haven't done a lot of Facebook ads at all yet, but almost all of the clients, that I've only been coaching for about almost 3 years now. But almost all of the online clients, that I've had have come just from me constantly posting helpful stuff. Them engaging, and then me just being kind of like ridiculously obsessive about a spreadsheet that I have their names on. Sorry if any of you hear this and think it's weird, but like, and so like, I just go down that spreadsheet and I'm like, who have I not talked to in a while? And then, you know, they eventually become clients. I mean, not all of them, obviously. Yes. There are people who are going to just kind of hang around and listen, but over time, you know, you've got to be, like you just said, like you got to be the one that's the top of the mind for them when that need comes up in their life. So. Man, that was so valuable. So you talked about like constantly putting that stuff out. One thing I like to ask is just on the content, like what does it look like when you're putting things out? So obviously you've covered some of that there, but what kind of format does most of your content take, and where are you posting it? Is it more writing? Is it more video? Is it more audio? Where do you put that stuff? That'd be the kind of how I want you to answer the content question.
Oh, that's a great question. So every platform has what we call native content, right? Mm-hmm. There are some things you see in certain places and some things you don't see in other places. For instance, you're not going to see a 15-minute video on Twitter. Mm-hmm. You can link to Twitter, and for folks that don't use Twitter, it's sort of based on very small messages, you know, bite-sized messaging, like 140 characters or something like that. You can do more, but Twitter's where people go for quick content connection. Yeah. They don't go there to stay, as opposed to YouTube, where you're much more likely to watch a 15, 20, or 30-minute video on YouTube. Yeah. It makes sense there. That's where people who want to view things that are a little bit longer are more likely to go. Yeah. You know, Instagram is really visual, so you got to make sure that whatever you have on Instagram looks good. Facebook, kind of back and forth. Sometimes pictures, sometimes text, sometimes video. So what I normally do on Facebook, I made a commitment to my Facebook page that I primarily do like blog style posts, just text posts. Yeah. I deviate from that from time to time, but Facebook sort of shows your followers what they engage with the most. Yeah. And early on when I got on Facebook, I was lucky enough to have a few posts that, you know, for my purposes, they sort of went viral. Mm-hmm. And they were all text posts. It was me writing something that explained something.
Yeah.
So years later, the people who follow me on my Facebook page, they are much more likely to see in their newsfeed things that are written. Mm-hmm. So videos don't really do well for me on Facebook, not on my business page.
Yeah.
You know, pictures don't even do that well on my Facebook page. Mm-hmm. But I noticed that text does, so I dove into that.
Yeah.
And I get great response from that. You know, on my normal Facebook page, just my Ren Jones page, my personal page, I can pretty much get away with posting anything.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So mm-hmm. whether it's a picture or whether it's a video or something like that. I also have a private group on Facebook. And in my group, I can post anything too. And get response because it's sort of a closed environment. On Instagram, I try to post at 7 a.m., at 1 o'clock p.m., and at 7 p.m. The feed's not in chronological order on Instagram, and that's okay. So if I post something at 7 a.m., some people may not see it until it'll pop into their feed tonight at 9 p.m. It's just not in order, which can drive you crazy.
Yeah.
However, on Instagram, if you're consistent with the times that you post, the people who follow you will start to get wise to the fact that they can go on your page at 7:30 in the morning, Eastern time for me. I'm in the Eastern time zone. At 8, you know, I guess that's 6 o'clock Central, and et cetera, et cetera. But they can go on a certain time and know that your first post will be up. regardless of when the feed would normally show it to them, they can just go to Fitness Jones Training and see the first post of the day.
Yeah.
They know that in the afternoon I'm going to post. So regardless of when the feed would normally show them the post, they can just go to my page and see that post. And the same thing at 7 p.m. So on Instagram, I'm much more likely to post video. IGTV gives me a great return on investment as far as what I post. So I try to do that as much as possible. But definitely video, definitely the best images that I can put on Instagram because it's image driven. So I had to sort of learn how to edit images, you know, better. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have to be a Photoshop expert, but This is part of your job. You know, if you choose for it to be, you know, you don't have to only deal with, you know, online advertising.
Right.
But if you choose for it to be, you have to respect the fact that, you know, it's part of your job.
Yeah.
I get it. You're an adult. You don't want to be on Instagram all day. It's a waste of time. It's, you know, it's a hole in the ozone. It's a, you know, it's where people get in trouble and, you know, everything that I've heard about Instagram and social media is the devil.
Yeah,
you gotta realize they said the same thing about books at one point.
Yep. I'm glad you said that. Yeah.
You know, at one point they said the same thing about radio. Radio's gonna rot your brain. My mother was born in 1936. There was no television in 1936. You know what they did? They listened to radio. They gathered around the radio. And at that time, she told me that my grandmother complained about that.
Television. Yeah, it's always going to be something. Whatever the newest technology is.
Whatever the newest thing is, if you're a business owner, you cannot romanticize what used to work.
Yeah.
You can't say, well, in my day, we did ads in the newspaper, and that always worked. You know, or in my day, we did radio ads, and that always worked. In my day, we did TV spots, local TV with the local cable, and that always worked. Look, the only reason that people see TV commercials is they're watching TV and the DVR remote falls off the bed and they can't reach it. So they got to watch. Otherwise, skipping through that.
Yeah.
The captive audience that we have as marketers right now is all the people, all the dumb people that you don't like, all the people you call zombies, all the people you honk your horn at, the people that little square in their hand mesmerized by the screen. That's your most captive audience. You can go with it or you can try to fight it, but you're going to become extinct.
Yeah.
Whatever the new thing is, if you don't jump into it.
Yeah, totally agree with you, man. I think got to use the tools. It's not evil. It's not good. It's neutral. And you make with it what you want, for sure.
Yeah.
So let's say moving into the sales piece here. So let's say that you have successfully gotten your stuff out in front of somebody. They know about you. They bought into your brand. They want to work with you or they think they might want to work with you. What does it look like you securing them as a client? Kind of just walk us through that. Is that a phone call? Is that Messenger? Like how do you kind of close the deal with somebody and they take them from non-client to client?
Gotcha. So here's my process. Typically what happens for me is I'll send a link and the link just has a quick survey, something they can easily fill out. And it gives me information about what their desire is, what it is that they're trying to get accomplished. Right. Mm-hmm. So a few key points to my little survey. Number one, obviously gathering their information. So I get their name and their email and their telephone number. If you're not building an email list of some type or a telephone list of some type or a spreadsheet like what Brandon has, do that so you won't be at the mercy of connections through social media. Because if all social media goes down and the only way you had to get in front of your audience was through social media, pardon my French, you're screwed.
Yeah, start a new business.
Yeah, you got to start a new business. So make sure you have an outside social media way to contact everybody that you need to be able to contact. Build a huge email list or phone list or whatever. So I get there, I capture that information, and there's a few key questions in my survey. One of the questions is, why now? Of all the times, why did you reach out to me now? And that question is important in the survey because it starts to, and it's an open question. They don't select from a group of things, like they have to write in their answer.
Yeah.
Asking that question gives you great data on what motivates people to commit to a change, what motivates people to go from contemplation to action. So that's an important question for me in my survey. And another important thing that I do is I head off the money objection, people who can't afford it. I head it off up front in that qualification survey, because I specifically say, and some people are shy about how much they charge, right? Mm-hmm. I specifically say that, if you decide to work with me, the programs that I have range from, let's say, $125 per month to $500 per month.
Mm-hmm. You tell them that in Messenger or wherever you're communicating by text?
Yeah, when they click a link, they pull up my little survey. And it's got little questions and answers, and then a submit button at the bottom, and then they submit that survey to me. And one of the pieces on that survey is, the amount for the programs is
ranges. Gotcha.
Blah blah blah. I say, is it worth it to you to pay blah 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 to change your life? And their answers that they can select from are yes. That's only $25 to $50 per week or what have you. Or no, I'm not willing to invest that much in myself to make this change. So I know where the money objection is before I ever have that conversation. And if there is one, I'm able to head it off up front. Because if they answer no, that they don't want to invest that much, my next question is, in that survey is, what do you think changing your life is worth? Put a dollar amount on it. Would be a fair price. So I'm gathering that information, so I'm not blindsiding them with the conversation. They're not blindsiding me with their sort of response to the money conversation. So if a survey comes through, I know that they have a base understanding of what the cost is, and that's extremely relaxing.
Yeah.
Sometimes I will admit it is better just to get them on the phone and talk through that. But, to each his own.
Yeah.
Some people, and I've done it both ways with success and with struggle. So I'm not saying one way is better than the other. For me right now, that feels a little bit more organic to me, but I think I may switch and just send them a link for a phone call and just have them schedule a call and talk through it. Both ways can work. There's no right way. Whatever lends it better to your personality and your sales style, I say do that.
Yeah. Cool, man. That's awesome. So for me, it's a very similar, like I have a survey also. It has some of the similar stuff in there. And then I need to actually put the price. That's one thing I'm learning from this, because I actually need to put the price in there, because I mean, I send them a link. It's kind of like a funnel. They have a Calendly link that they can schedule a call. It takes them directly to a survey that I've built in Google Forms. And then once they complete the survey, it pops up with the link to my website, and it says pricing, all the information about coaching testimonials, all that's there. And so what I've found though is some people will go check that out, other people don't. And so on the call, it's still a shock to them. So I like the idea of putting the pricing itself on the survey. So that's really helpful.
At least a range.
Yeah.
And it may not work for you. And for the folks listening out there, Brandon and I can only give you suggestions. We can tell you what you've done, but you try it. Maybe it works for your business and your clientele. Maybe it doesn't. But the most important thing is to not die from analysis paralysis, right?
Yes.
Don't spend the next 6 months toiling over whether or not you should add it. Add it to your survey out there, see if it fixes things or if it causes more problems. If it causes more problems, change it back. I know that Brandon and I agree on the fact that, like you just said, action over everything, man. Your business cannot build off of what you think might happen.
Right.
Never will. It never will. You got to get in there, and you're going to mess it up. You're going to mess it up. It's the only way to do it. Is get in it, make the error, and learn from it. None of us are smart enough to get away with not going through that process of failure. Right. None of it.
Absolutely.
You just end up not ever doing it. That's what's going to happen. You just 10 years from now, you'll be talking about that business you wish you would have started.
Yep, for sure, man. Well, that's some really good stuff there. Moving into the retention piece. So you've got somebody, they're your client, you're working with them already. What makes them stay with you?
Yeah, that's another great question. So since I came from like a sales training background, I'm all about heading off objections before they happen, right? Mm-hmm. Like I want to get on the front side of anything that I feel like may be problematic later. Mm-hmm. So one of the things I do is I send them a very well-crafted email up front of sort of what my expectations are for me and what my expectations are for them. And I make sure that we have an understanding.
Yeah.
Because one of the reasons that you'll have issues with retention of clients is just a genuine misunderstanding. There's something that they don't get about what they needed to do or something you don't get about what they wanted you to do. So a lot of the retention issues can be solved in being very, very transparent up front, so that when we get to these issues, it's not shocking. A phrase that I'll commonly use with clients is, you know, occasionally I'm going to tell you things that you don't like.
Yeah.
But it'll be the truth.
Mm-hmm.
I will never not tell you the truth just because I'm afraid you won't like what I have to say. Yeah. And that handles a lot of things up front, but the upfront message of, hey, look, here's what you can expect from me. In return, here's what I like to think that I can count on for you. You know, if you agree to the things that I've written here, just reply to this email with agreed.
Yeah.
Cool. And it's easy to defer back to that with the client. If you get into a sticky spot, you know, you've got something that you know that they read and you can call back to it and say, hey, I completely understand where you're coming from right now. And I'm sure you remember where we started this all, right? We talked about this earlier up front. Remember that email that we talked about and you agreed to it, you know, help me understand what's changed for you,
yeah.
You know, and it's much easier to deal with those things and on the front end than you are on the back end. Like if there's one thing I could tell you guys out there in podcast land is don't conceal anything up front because you feel like it might cost you a sale. I've done it.
Yes.
I've done it.
Yeah.
You know,
me too.
I've conveniently not said something because I'm like, man, I really want this sale and I don't want to say this because that might be the thing to set them off. And then eventually, you know what? The thing pops up anyway.
Yeah. No, and now, you tell me. Yeah.
Yeah. Now they're upset. Like,
yeah.
You're always better off not capturing the client than you are capturing the client under false pretenses and having to deal with the stress of knowing that if that one thing that happens that you didn't talk about, you know, everything could be lost. Like, it's not a great way to go into a relationship with a client.
Right.
You know, just tell them everything.
Secrets.
If they say, no, I can't do that, that's not for me. Say, hey, man, I really appreciate you giving me a shot. You know, I'm sorry that we couldn't work together. But if you ever change your mind or if, you know, you want to give it another shot, just reach out to me. I'll be more than happy to talk to you. Like, you're better not having them. Take it back to that branding that I was talking about. You know, you'd be amazed how many clients that I didn't close come back within a 12-month period of time. Yeah. Just because I was willing to let them go. I was nice to them. I told them the truth. Another person sold them on a stack of, you know, gold at the end of the rainbow. That's not the truth. It seemed attractive at the time.
30 pounds in 30 days.
Right. They go through and realize the total crap. And then they come back and say, you know, you were so nice and you told me that would happen. But you were willing to let me go explore that. You know, I'm ready to do work now. So just because a client doesn't do what you want them to do or a potential client doesn't do what you want them to do, it's not a free license to totally ruin a relationship.
Yeah.
You never know. So one of the ways that I'm able to maintain, good retention is heading things off up front.
Yeah. Setting expectations.
There are very few things that can happen during the course of us working together that would surprise them.
Yeah.
And the other thing, just loving them, man.
Yeah.
You know, when I was leading people on a management team, I was taught that the first rule of leadership is to define reality. The last rule of leadership is accountability. And everything in between those two things is love and service. Yeah. You know, you love the people, you serve the people.
Yeah.
But you define the reality and you hold them accountable. But, you know, in the context of doing those two things on the ends, everything in the center, man, just love and service. Treat them well. Respect them. Go out of your way for them. Do something extra. Yeah. You know, people don't want to leave a situation like that. It's very rare.
Yeah, man. And I'll say, like, for me, like, I'm naturally more relational. So I thought, like, at first I was thinking, like, because I start texting, like, you know, at first I'm very professional when I start talking to somebody. And then as we get closer, like, I'm like, you know, I'm making jokes, I'm acting stupid. Like, you know, it's not that I don't do that up front, like, but I do just, like, you know, I'm holding some of that back. But I start getting to a point where, like, this is my friend almost, you know what I mean? And so, like, I started thinking, is this weird? Like, am I weirding people out? But no, not really. Like, the majority of people want a relation. Like, if you're coaching them, they don't want, like, to be coached by just some, you know, robot on the other end of the phone. Like, they want somebody who's actually, like, cares about, like, just like you said, loves them, cares about their life, you know? So,
100%. Again, that tracks back to the marketing, man. Everybody's got the same product. Everybody can't be branded, you know? Yeah. So, God, the more branded you whether that's good or bad, the jury's out.
I don't know. Yeah, I'll leave that open.
But for people who like branding, the more branded you are, the more of them are going to hire you. Right. You know what I mean? You know, again, your vibe attracts your tribe, dude.
Yeah.
It's just the way it works.
Yeah. Well, man, you've given, like, a ton of value with this. Let me just a couple more quick practical questions, and then we'll wrap up with a few kind of quick hits at the end, like I normally do here. So, one thing I think that doesn't get talked about enough, like, in the business space is kind of like, and you've already touched on this some with your certifications that you continue to get, but kind of the continuing to improve yourself. I think a lot of people they have a skill set and they jump in and start a business with that skill set, but then they just keep that static skill set without really continuing to grow and improve it. So what are some ways that you are committed to, like, improving, like, yourself and your business?
Yeah, man, you got to read constantly. And if you don't like to read with your eyes, read with your ears. I'm a big time podcast, audiobook, type dude, man. Like, I rarely get in my car and I'm not taking in input in relation to coaching, in relation to business, in relation to, human psychology, you know, nutritional psychology. Like, I'm always learning. You got to be, like, business owners are by nature learners.
Yeah.
Whichever way learning comes to you, learning could be, you know, it could be a weekend class at your local, you know, Home Depot or Lowe's, you know, because they're, you know, you have a company that deals with wood and you want to know how, what nail works best with what type of wood, you know, like, there's so much out there in every genre. You gotta be willing to learn it, man. You're in business and in life, there's no maintenance. The idea of the same is that's a myth. That's mythology. Like, you're either growing or dying.
Yeah.
There's no even in business. So if you're not growing, you're dying. You're slowly dying. As human beings, you know, when we hit our last growth spurt from the day after to the rest of your life, guess what you're doing? You're dying.
Yeah.
That's it. So you have to know that as a business owner, man, and you have to find a way to make sure that you're constantly growing. Continuing education, you know, whatever you can do. Like, just remember, you're either green and growing or you're brown and dying. And that's it. It's one between.
Good, man. I like that. And then planning wise, you know, I think some businesses and some business owners look 5 years in the future and things like that. Others have struggle, like, to even, like, know what they're going to do, like, the next week. And most, I'd say, fall somewhere in between. So how would you say you kind of plan for the future with your business?
Yeah, man. So here's the thing. Like, you're going to have a personality type, right? And it's challenging to operate outside of your personality type. And here's what we do in business. We do the same thing in life. Here's an easier analogy. You got a brilliant kid who's a genius at writing, might be the next great screenwriter of our time, might be the next Martin Scorsese, or might be the next J.K. Rowling's and write the next Harry Potter, you know, what have you. And they get straight A's in English and writing and composition, and they get a C in gym, you know, or maybe they get a C in math. And what the parent's most likely to do is say, hey, you really need to bring that C up in math. Yeah. You know, so you take this genius writer and you make them take all their energy and concentrate it on math so they can be average. You know, that's what we do in the context of life. That's what we do as humans. We suppress what we're amazing at, mm-hmm. and we concentrate on what we suck at, quite yeah. frankly. Yeah. If you put a lot of energy into your really bad, you know, into your weaknesses, you end up with really strong weaknesses. Yeah. So some of you are going to be great planners, right? You're going to be good at it. Like, you got things laid out. You know what you're going to do hour for hour the next day for the next month. Mm-hmm. Some of you aren't. Some of you are going to be better visionaries. If you're a visionary, you probably need to hire a planner. Now, yeah. you don't have to have a big staff to do that. You can get a virtual assistant. You can go on Fiverr, F-I-V-E-R-R. Yeah. You can go on Upwork. I think it's called Upwork now. It used to be called yeah. Elance.
It is.
Hire a freelance, you know, for like $20.
Yeah.
You know, you give them a small amount of work and they may be doing it for like $7 or $8 an hour or 10 or 12. Who knows? You get a virtual assistant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, hire somebody. The planning needs to happen though.
Yeah.
Because the absence yeah. of a plan, you're going to be out there willy-nilly.
Yeah.
So my methodology is to plan out my week. I know during the course of the week everything I'm going to do. I use a calendar scheduling system just like Brandon does, just like mm-hmm. the thing he scheduled me for this. I have my big rocks that need to happen before a certain deadline, a certain date. And I don't project out more than a week for tasks. I do project out for more than a week for, you know, bigger overarching goals. But you need a plan.
Yeah.
You know, you got to have some type of plan, like doing it by the seat of your pants, off the cuff, improvising.
Yeah.
You can only get that for so long. Yeah. And you're stunning your business growth because you can't, there's no room for expansion. You know, you can't make more money if your process is jumbled up. If you've got a terrible process at $20,000 a year, you're going to have a terrible process at $20 million a year.
Yeah.
In both cases, you're going to overspend. You're going to put yourself in a situation where you go out of business. So planning is important. And if you're not great at it, hire somebody for a minimal fee that is good at it. And if you can't hire somebody, hire an intern, a college kid that's majoring in business. You can go to these college career.
Hey, Ren, you just got muted. I'm not sure what happened there, but you muted yourself or something.
Community college, major college. Say, hey, how do I get some kids in here for an intern? I'm a business owner. I run a business. How do I get them credits? Like, there's always a way, you know, but you need to plan.
Yeah, absolutely, man.
Operate without it.
Yep. I have it written on my desk right here that I very much identify with is play to your strengths, work on your weaknesses. Like, and I honestly play to my strengths a lot more than I work on my weaknesses because sometimes I'm so busy like playing on my strengths that I don't work on my weaknesses.
Right.
It's got to go the other way. But I you know, man, like I 100% agree with you. I think sometimes we focus so much on trying to just like, oh, I'm not that great at this. You know, like you said, instead of outsourcing it, we try to figure that out and waste time. Man, we've only got so much time to do in a day, a life to do this.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm great at video and I'm great at talking. Mm-hmm. So guess what I did today?
Yeah.
I shot some video and now I'm talking.
Yeah.
You do know, like, why would I spend my time doing something that I'm not good at?
Right. Right. Yeah. You know, yep.
It reduces because I want to be exponential, you know, and I can't be exponential in places where I don't excel.
Yeah. Yep.
No,
absolutely.
Nobody's
man.
Paying P. Diddy to do math. You know? He's doing what he's good at. He's good at wearing shades. You know, he's good at being slightly annoying and he's good at saying, take that background on rap song.
Yeah.
You know,
so by the way, man, he's. It, on, I don't know if you've gotten on that TikTok app yet. I'm playing around with it, but he's on there and he does not have like a huge following yet, strangely. So if you're really still trying to reach out to him, jump on there.
Hey, I need to get on TikTok, man. I need to reach it, man. I need to get on it.
Yeah, man. So last practical question, and we're going to wrap it up here pretty quick, but what do you do? And this is one that somebody had recommended. So what is your payment method process? Like, how do people pay? What kind of app do you use? It's like, what's that look like?
That's great, man. So I just use PayPal. A couple of reasons I use PayPal. It's easy accessible, number one. Number two, it's recognizable.
Yeah.
Like, we're at a point now where everybody trusts PayPal, right? You use it, everybody uses it. So in a sales process, part of the salesperson's job, to the extent that they can, is to minimize sales resistance.
Yeah.
So if I tell you, you can pay me through this link, it's ren.jones.me. .canada.uk.australia.
Yeah.
Put your credit card right in there. Mm-hmm. Like, people don't know me.
Yeah.
They might be hesitant to do that. But if I say, I'll send you the PayPal link, your process through PayPal. Yeah. Less sales resistance.
Yeah.
So are there less expensive options? Probably. Mm-hmm. But there's the cost of doing business. Yeah. And you got to weigh out the cost of doing business with the ease of doing business. Mm-hmm. And for me, PayPal's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
So my clients, they hit a PayPal link, and I've set up recurring payment plans. So it auto drafts.
Perfect. I was about to ask you if you did recurring payment. Cool.
I'm about to switch from monthly to biweekly because you get an extra payment.
Yeah.
If you do monthly, you don't get as many payments as you do if you do every 2 weeks, because there's 52 weeks in a year. So you end up, if somebody has like a $200 payment per month, you end up with, I think, $400 extra at the end of the year you would have made otherwise. Not significant, but if you got 20 clients, now you got $4,000 extra that you made during the course of the year just because they're paying biweekly instead of paying monthly recurring.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. It's a good strategy. Yeah, I think that's awesome. A side note, I use Square, same reasons. It's just same. I think when I compared Square, it was just very, very slightly cheaper or something. I just like the interface more, so I went with that. But I actually, like, for groups, I do – this is a side note. We'll talk about this later, but I do groups – I use Square for my groups. For my one-on-one clients, I actually still just use Google Pay and send it manually, just because there's no fee.
Right.
that's me, like, not wanting to trade the money for the ease there. But
that's all right, though.
As pros, I'll do that. But okay, so just a few quick questions. Three quick questions to wrap it up here. And you've covered a ton, but one big one would just be, let's say that you are at a coffee shop or wherever you're hanging out, and you meet somebody who's like a small business owner or is about to start a small business, and they just ask you like what's one thing you could one piece of advice you could give me, like, what's the one thing, if you could only limit yourself to one thing, what piece of advice would you give a new small business owner?
Take action immediately. If the idea hits your head, get it to action quick. You can instead of trying to make the right decision, make a decision and then make it a right decision by your action. You can almost correct any decision, but you can never get the time back you spent deliberating.
Yeah.
Nobody's, you can make more money. Nobody's making more time.
Yeah.
Take action quickly.
I love that. Yeah. So
get it from your brain to execution.
Yep. Yep. Work it out from there. I had a guy tell me years back that it's easier for like a train to change direction if it's already moving than if it's like stopped, and I think that's so applicable to what you just said, for sure.
Absolutely, man. I'm gonna borrow that one. That's a good one.
Yeah, man. This one is one I'm only gonna ask about the first 10 guests I interview. You are number 6. So I, because it's a new podcast, I'm asking this question, and this is where that payment question I just asked you came from. But with this, if this was a podcast you were listening to, are there any questions that you would like to hear covered, in like a practical nature like this, and for me to ask a small business owners that I'm not already asking, like on the show, is there something that you would think would add more value?
Yes. I would say, what's your why?
Somebody, you're the second person that said that. And so I actually have it on there. And if somebody doesn't already cover it, you've already covered it. If somebody doesn't cover that, I ask it at the end. But I love it. So elaborate on why you like that.
Because, everybody gets into business for different reasons. Mm-hmm. And I think, and some transparency in that, like, give us a transparent answer of why you do what you do, like the real answer. Because everybody gets into business for different reasons. And I think that people who are thinking about getting into business, and that's who you're targeting the podcast for, you know, to some extent, I think they're out there sitting around thinking that there's these perfect people out here doing this. You know, people who have all their stuff together are going into business. Mm-hmm. You know, people who have it all figured out. You know, for some of us, you know, you went to one funeral too many. And you were like, I got to change something. Like, these experiences have broken me in a way that the only way for me to heal is help people. And the only thing that I know to help people is fitness, because I'm familiar with that. You know, like, I think the reason that people make the decision and the transparency about how it affected their lives and the, you know, the things that they went through to get to that point, man, I think that would help a potential business owner just as much as any nuts and bolts. Because there's so many different stories that if you haven't heard your story yet, you feel like there's something wrong with you, you know, like there's something odd about your life. You're like, why can't I do this? Why don't I have what that person has who owns a business? The reality is everybody's pretty freaking scared when they do it.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh yeah.
So I think, you know, connecting that why and the emotion of starting a business to how the business got started, I think that'd be a crucial question to ask.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you, man. And then the last thing here, just really quick, where can people find you? Where do you prefer them look you up?
Oh man, I'm at anywhere where you put in Fitness Jones Training.
Okay. Okay.
Instagram, I'm at Fitness Jones Training. On Facebook, I'm Fitness Jones Training. My website is fitnessjonestraining.com. So you can type that in pretty much anywhere and find me.
Cool. Cool. I'm going to be looking for you on TikTok, man. I'm waiting.
Yeah, I need to get on that. That's a sign, man. That's definitely a sign. I've heard Gary Vee talk about it forever. Yeah,
it's good, man. Well, you know what? I'm going to wrap it up. I appreciate it. We'll talk about this offline, but Ren, really, really appreciate your time, man. Seriously, taking time to talk about the podcast. Thank you, man.
Hey, thanks for having me, man. You need to have me back I'm scheduling all 100th episodes.
All right.
Every podcast I've been on, I have asked to be the 100th episode.
Okay. Guest. I can do that. Writing it down right now on my desk, which is wood.
Yeah.
So you
100. I expect Jones, to have a call.
100th episode. Got it, man. Thank you.
Yeah.
Hey, Brandon again. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed it, got anything from it, please tune back in and please share it with any other small business owners in your life.